At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, and anxious to talk to Jay Brittman. I'm curious what Jay is going to name his new boat. Jay, good morning.
Good morning. I have no idea what you're talking about, but
I thought maybe you might have caught the end of the last segment with Ron Anderson and Johnny V. Johnny's named has got a new boat. He named it Authentic. Sorry, just
very nice.
Little continuity.
I just got up a few minutes ago, Steve.
Well,
it's all good.
Not a problem. I have got the updated Derby watch in front of me, and week two, as the coal car stokes the Derby watch train, pulling out of the station, Jay.
Yes. We've got the same 20 that we had a week ago, just different positions in terms of their odds rankings. Obviously, the most significant move made by Mandaloon off of his win in the Risen Star. So he is now up to the fourth choice on the line set by Marty McGee, who I do Derby Watch with these days. That was the most significant move forward. Ron Bauer moved up a little bit as well in terms of his pricing. And the biggest drop when Marty's odds was with Senor Buscador, who he's made his longest shot of our 20 at the moment. I'm more forgiving of his race than Marty was, and people will be able to see by the comments that we have on those horses.
Right, right, and I am as well. And in fact, so much so that I took a little of that 39-1 in the future. I figured that was the opportunity to get him at an attractive number. Meanwhile, Jay, the weather issues that now is shoving the Southwest in perilous approximation to the Rebel, kind of throwing things, into a little disarray. I mean, certainly difficult. Not that the horsemen didn't adjust and aren't capable on that front, but some of the ramifications of the news this week.
Well, it looks at the moment as though the main horses that we're going to run in the Southwest are going to stay in the Southwest. The two biggest names in the race, Essential Quality and Jackie's Warrior, have been training at Fairgrounds. It's Keep Me in Mind who's the one that's a little more precarious right now because of the track being frozen and not being able to get on there. He really hasn't trained on the track now for quite a while. And yeah. Mary Rampolini talked to Diodoro the other day, and he said, look, if he can't get on the track by Saturday and have a week of training, they might just have to wait for the Rebel, which, because of these two postponements of the Southwest, is now only 2 weeks after the Southwest. And occasionally you'll get horses that run in the Southwest and come back in the Rebel. But that's just not going to happen this time. I would just find it highly doubtful that anybody of any consequence is going to wheel back in 2 weeks. I wonder how many might just decide to wait for the Rebel, being as it's only 2 weeks later and it's five times the point value.
Right.
I know in the case of Essential Quality and Jackie's Warrior, the connections of those horses are committed to go to the Southwest. They want to have that race and then more time going into the potentially Arkansas Derby or whatever final Derby prep of choice they decide to go to. Maybe even in the case of Essential Quality, the Bluegrass would obviously be a race that would make total sense for him with the success he had at Keeneland with winning two grade ones last fall. And that race is a week before the Arkansas Derby. So you'd be 4 weeks out from the Kentucky Derby going there. So the spacing for Essential Quality and potentially even Jackie's Warrior might be better to just go ahead and run next week anyway, even though the point value is not as much. But I could see some real reason for Keep Me in Mind, if you can't get proper training into run against two horses like that, for them to just wait the two more weeks and run in a race that's got a more significant point value.
which makes a lot of sense. He was already, going to bang heads with Jackie's Warrior and Essential Quality, and right there you got two heavy heads to deal with. So it makes sense. We'll see who else. I guess who Caddo River was going to wait for the Rebel anyway, and Baffert. I think you reported, right, the concert tour headed that direction.
Right, yeah. I mean, but neither of those horses were ever intended for the Southwest.
Right,
They're straight away going to the Rebel. So, and they're both, they'll both be fine for that race.
Well, in the meantime, some of the other news, one of the best parts of the Derby Watch grid is keeping track of, riding assignments and, other movements and declarations Baffert settling on the Gotham for Freedom Fighter, even though, Jay, it doesn't feel, you always have such a great feel for distance limitations. What's Baffert's thinking on what this horse might be?
I haven't asked him specifically about what he thinks his limitations, if any, might be. I just think this is a good move at this stage for this horse. You know, he came off of a long layoff. He only ran once last year and won at Del Mar. And then he was off for 6 months, and I thought ran a very good race, finishing second to Concert Tour, who had a recency edge on him and also had a post position edge on him in the 7-furlong San Vicente. And he ran a big race that day. And so that was he's never gone two turns. And to me, coming back off of a long layoff and running well in a 7/8 race to go to a one-turn mile for his next start is, for this horse at this time, I think the right move. And then you can go from there. And if he runs well there, you could certainly come back on the wood, or there's plenty of other options for him. He could even run in the Santa Anita Derby, depending on how things play out, though there's obviously horses that are better regarded in the barn at the moment that are potentially for that race. But first things first, get through the Gotham and then go from there. But I think for this horse at this point, it's the right move to make. If you go to the San Felipe, you're running against Life is Good, and if you go to the Rebel, you're running against Concert Tour. So you might as well go somewhere where nobody else from the barn is and try and knock them all off if you can.
Exactly. A couple of other elements, of course, that accompany the Derby Watch each Wednesday, a feature, and you had a nice conversation with Kieran McLaughlin about Luis Saez, and Kieran kind of shifting his tack, looking for his Derby win. He came so close, going back to closing argument, and other other good horses that took swings. That was a nice feature this week.
Yeah, I wanted to catch up with him. It's been nearly a year now since he decided to get out of training and become Saez's agent when Richie DePass retired. And they did well last year. They finished third in the country in both wins and purse earnings. And Saez won his first Breeders' Cup race, won Essential Quality, won the Juvenile. So they had great success, and they're on the Derby favorite. So it just seemed like a good time to maybe catch up with Karen, who has gone down this route many times before as a trainer, but never in this position, and just talk about trying to keep Luis on this horse and trying to get him on other horses too. In fact, he had gotten him on Fire at Will for the Fountain of Youth when those races were not going to be run on the same day. But now with that happening, he's obviously wants to stick with Essential Quality, who's the Derby favorite at this point. But he would have had him on Fire at Will as well in the Fountain of Youth if the Southwest had been run any other day.
Well, and speaking of the Fountain of Youth, for those that are tracking horses, greatest honor and the big name at the top of that list, and there's a chance that Prevalence might contest that, but if there's an allowance race, it get the sense when we talked to Brendan Walsh the other morning that he might be a little more cautious, but it also might depend on how the race shapes up field size and so forth. And, you know, running down the others, based on this week's Derby Watch notes, the San Felipe you mentioned, Jay, Life is Good, and Roman Centurion, and, off the back end of the Risen Star, of course, Mandaloon. I noted that Doug O'Neill turning Louisiana bound with Rod Charlie.
Right. Yeah, I reported that a week ago. That's where they wanted to go with him. I think the mile and 3/16 of that race is appealing for them and with Hot Rod Charlie. And that's another situation where he's trying to keep horses from not running against one another. He's got the Great One, who was that romping maiden winner last time out for the San Felipe. So he'll go in that race, and Hot Rod Charlie will go to Louisiana.
A couple of other things, Jay, since we talked last Friday, something that you wrote about that happened after we wrapped up the show and after we had talked, some of the fallout from Flavian Pratt's change of agents with Gary Stevens, going to book for Drayden Van Dyke. I saw that you wrote that later in the day.
Yeah, so Gary's going to be an agent again. He's done it before, and he and Drayden are very close, and that came about in a pretty quick manner. It was just sort of an opportunity. It wasn't anything that they had talked about, I don't think, recently, because you know Drayden was perfectly happy with Brad Pegram, but you know Brad Pegram decided to go with Flavian Pratt when the opportunity presented itself. And in California, you can only carry two riders as an agent, and Brad already has got Mike Smith, so Drayden ended up being the odd man out in that situation. And he and Gary talked and decided to go forward. And Gary will now apparently be in town for the first day of entries, that he will be Drayden's agent, because the first draw in the new book is Sunday for next Friday's races, and Gary will be home now because he got bumped off his flight yesterday.
Exactly. We talked about it earlier with Johnny and Ron Anderson. Well, Jay, turn from Derby Watch to action on the Oval, and nice group actually in this Buena Vista. I think I mentioned yesterday, and a lot of the usual suspects, but that's okay.
Round up the Mucho Unusual suspects, right?
Exactly.
yeah, Mucho Unusual will be obviously one of the top contenders in here. She loves Santa Anita's grass course. I mean, she's just so much better there than anywhere else. She's 5-for-9 lifetime, and has won 2 straight, including her most recent, going a flat mile in the megahertz. But I don't think there's a whole lot of separation between just about anybody in this field. It's really competitive, and I just wouldn't want to take a short price in here. John White made Charmaine's Mia the morning line favorite, and I could see why. She got a giant fig when she won the Las Cienegas. But, you know, she's got to go 2 turns, and there's some other pace in the race that might compromise her chances in here. So it's a really tough call. But the one horse in here that I know I'm going to use and gamble on, depending on if her price is right, is Red Lark. I just think she's better cutting back to a mile, and she's going to get some pace to run into. She went a mile and a quarter last time in the American Oaks, and there was just no pace on in that race. Duopoly led from start to finish. And I think she's better at a shorter distance anyway. And I think it helps when she gets some pace in front of her, and there's going to be some pace in this race. And I think she has the potential to fall through the cracks here and be, you know, John made her 8-to-1, which to me looks like the right number. Mm. And if she can be in that range, to me, she's worth a flyer. But I could see making a case for about 8 of the 10 horses in here. It's a really tough race.
It came up really nice, and you know, there's an interesting invader. I thought too that Sloan Garden, the mare for Manny Badia, that's coming down from San Francisco. who is okay and has got kind of that mid-pack stalk and go style, and maybe from a FIG standpoint seems just a cut beneath, but is going to get overlooked in here and picks up Pereira. I got a little interest in Sloan Garden at a number in here.
Yeah, no, she's not impossible. Her form is decent enough that she should be able to act with these. I just think she might not be quite this good, but
right.
at the price, she's worth. You know, look, if she's 3-1, you're not interested. Like you say, 12-1, it's worth taking a flyer. But like I said, I'm gonna make my minor interest in here revolve around Red Lark.
Yeah, those races she ran last summer, going a mile and a 16th. And I know they're minor stakes, the Golden Poppy and the Burbank. They would fit in here. Kind of nice. That's the Saturday feature. It's a nice enough card tomorrow. Ends with a 6.5 furlong turf allowance in the ninth. It's got some nice ones, you know, utilizing this new chute. I wish it was 6.5 down the hill. The maiden special on the card is a turf sprint variety for 3-year-old fillies that goes as the third, and no main track maiden races of interest. And of course, I think I forgot to mention yesterday, Jay, that it was the anniversary of Justify's maiden win. Just so people can put into perspective what he accomplished starting on February 18th.
Yeah, it was quite the run that he had in a short but sweet.
Well, we from a domestic standpoint, obviously not a Derby watch weekend. Sunday at Tokyo Racecourse, the Hyacinth for the Japanese road to the Derby. But Jay, we'll table it, and we'll look forward to the Southwest and more next week.
Yeah, no, you got the Southwest, you got the Fountain of Youth, and even on Friday night next week, the Battaglia Turfway. So there's going to be 3-point scoring races next weekend.
Lots to anticipate, and starting to get serious as the calendar turns, the value, the points ratchet up as well, and the mile and the eighth opportunities start to become regular. Jay, have a great weekend. I appreciate it.
You too, Steve. Thanks.
DRF Pribman, everybody. Jay Pribman. And we'll stay here, and we're going to go find out where Hammer is, if he's snowbound, how he managed to get to the track. So Case, let's get Jay in, Hammer in, and see what was up. It's been an adventure, from what I can tell, in a couple of conversations this week with Rick about the staff getting over to the racetrack and everything that's gone on in Hot Springs. It's just amazing that what they've had to deal with. And Hammer gave you a taste of that on Tuesday with the announcement, of course, of the tabling of races till next week. So we'll get Hammer in here. I don't think there was any other of those. Did we? I think we ran. Yeah, we ran everything down. Southwest. San Felipe, and there's still obviously plenty of other horses to fill in the blanks. I when it came to prevalence, I did not get the sense that that Brendan Walsh was, too eager to, to force him into the fountain. But we'll see. I mean, if you end up with a smallish, a smallish field, we'll see what happens there. I'm glad that was an encouraging from Johnny about Proxy, because we were so focused on Mandaloon, really did not talk much about Proxy's effort in there in the Risen Star. So it does Jay, it also regarding Senior Buscador, you know, I thought, I speculated Rebel coming right out, but Jay also has got potential for him to consider the Santa Anita Derby. Interesting. Well, we'll talk about it. We'll catch up with Todd Fincher. I get the full report. I'm a fan. I mean, I've made it clear about Senior Buscador. We'll look for Hammer in a minute, Scully to follow, and with James, we're going to go through the Laurel slate, the Sprint Fest action. Case, Hammer? No? That's a no. All right. Well, no, there he is. I thought I'd heard a little paper shuffling in the background. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I guess my little 2 mile trip in from the outskirts of Hot Springs to the track not quite as dramatic as these guys getting stuck around the world. That's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. That was. I'm glad we had a chance to let everybody, you know, understand how haphazard the thing was handled.
Yeah, and you know what? It's probably a good time to stop talking about it because both of us could go off, and it's probably a good idea that we don't. But anyway, good news. Everybody made it into the track. I had to get a ride as the roads. We were going through the meltdown freeze overnight trick where the roads get real icy. So the main road's good. It's just getting to the, you know, getting through the tributaries to get to the main road. So we're all, I think we may be the only people in the building, meaning the racing office crew here, taking entries for Thursday. But we're back at it. Snow's gone, and, you know, it's going to be, temperature's going to rise each day, you know, through the weekend. So hopefully for us, it's over. I mean, I feel terrible for the people down south in Texas and some of the other places that, you know, we've all heard about without any power and water and everything else. So, you know, we know what they're going through. I can't imagine going through what we did without power or water or heat. Mm-hmm. So, you know, thoughts out to them.
Exactly. What is the status of the racetrack, you know, in terms of condition and training?
So I just went over and asked Pat Pope. I said, what do they do, you know, with the snow? They let it melt. They said, no, they start grading it off to the outside little by little. He said they were working on it all night. And eventually, you know, get down there and then work the track and get to it. We're hoping to get on the track this weekend, more likely in the afternoon than in the morning because the sun will be out and they'll be able to work the track a little bit. But, you know, they're on it. Like I said, the sun's out. We're through the worst of it for sure. And hope to get back on the track this weekend, and then race on Thursday and then, you know, continue on. And you probably saw the press release where
– Yep.
We know we moved the stakes, which was a good idea. And, you know, it's funny with that Southwest has been like a, you know, a chess piece, moving all over the board. And you were talking to Priven this morning about the Luis Saez and Kieran. And, you know, Kieran's been, you know, Kieran and I have been texting back and forth. When is it going to be? I don't know. It's going to be here. It's going to be there. I mean, obviously he was hoping that it would be on Sunday because he wouldn't have to give up all his mounts on the weekend with the Fountain of Youth and all their big races, but he's going to stick with the big horse, of course. And Kieran is just, he's such a good guy to begin with, to deal with. And he's a perfect agent because he knows everybody. And he's just a good guy. He couldn't be happier for him, you know, quote, landing where he did with a quality rider like Saez. So, that's always a great story because that's what these guys do. They got to be on top of it. And you had Ron Anderson on this morning talking about, you think it's just booking mounts. It's booking airlines and hotels and taxis and everything else for their riders. So everything's a little bit deeper than it looks like on the surface.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, especially you know, when you start folding in what everybody's dealing with protocols, and it does seem at this point, you know, now that it, you know, call it what, 9 months of experience and some trial and error, we seem to be in a pretty nice spot when it comes to that, and even domestically with, you know, with jocks moving around, coming into New Orleans this past week, and you know, Johnny talked about heading to California for next week. So it took a little bit of trial and error, but feels like everybody's so accustomed to it at this point that we're in good shape. Rick? I can't tell if Rick's got a separate, if he's not hearing me, or Case, you want to pick him up? Yeah. Let's see what, yeah. Take him off the air for a second. Yeah, the communication to Hot Springs and that building, that, you know, the building is a lot of cinder block kinds of things, you know. Okay, Case is going to call him back because he I could tell he was struggling. For those on the that haven't seen, I mentioned it yesterday, but didn't see the way the schedule is going to unfold. Next Saturday, Southwest Razorback Spring Fever. And then on Sunday, the Biakoa, the Dixie Belle, and the Down the Dusty Road. So that's the way the rescheduled action is going to, it's kind of cool, actually. That's a nice way to break them up, too. There's Hammer back with us now. Rick.
Yes, we're back.
There we go. I just gave everybody the specifics on Southwest Razorback Spring Fever Saturday, Biakoa, Dixie Belle, Down the Dusty Road Sunday.
Right, and, you know, I'm glad we're not losing the stakes, and, you know, some comments, oh, the Southwest is close to the Rebel and this and that. You know, I went back and looked for the last 4 or 5 years just to see how many horses actually ran in both of them, the Southwest and then the Rebel, and then went on to this, you know, to the not many, and actually not many horses of note. There's been a lot of horses that were 30, 40, 50 to one that did the Southwest Rebel trick. So you know what, it as far as that goes, it's not going to affect it much. You got horse, especially nowadays when horses don't run that many times, you're probably going to do, you know, Southwest to the Arkansas Derby and then Rebel to the Arkansas Derby, or do what you know, Caddo River's doing. He went on the first one, he skipped the second one, he'll go on the next one. So horses don't run as often, so the 2 week difference between those two races is really not going to affect anything. The winners of those races and the horses that run good in those races will probably just make the next start in the Arkansas Derby. So no harm done. You know, when you got a 750 race and $1 million race, they'll find ways to enter.
Yeah, well, exactly, and that part of it, you know, there is the back door portion about the points, you know, the value of the two races from a, you know, Churchill standpoint, but there's still plenty of racetrack left for those accumulating points. So and you know, there's also the distance progression as well that, you know, that
right,
the trainers
exactly
are gonna
exactly
deal with.
That moves on. So we're lucky that Jay had mentioned, you know, the top three going in, Essential Quality and Steve's horse, Jackie's Warrior, and Deodoro's horse. The two of those are off the grounds right now. They were training, and Deodoro's horse will be here, and he'll have time to get legs up. He was fit and everything. So they continued on, and, you know, we might even pick up a horse or two because of the two-week delay on that race, and the Rebel will be the Rebel as it is. So it's good. We feel good, and we move on. It's funny, last year we were the ones, everyone else wasn't running, we were the only ones open, and now here this year we're had to take a few days off. So, you know, it comes around, goes around. You see it all eventually in this game. But I don't know if you heard me earlier before we cut out. I said it was good to hear Chris on earlier with Fawner Park coming on, because that last year that was a savior to a lot of us. I said, I wish he was around yesterday. I was playing Pompano Park last night just to get a little action. When you when you're stuck in your room for 3 days, you will pretty much do anything to try and get something to happen. But I think the weather's done, and we're you know, looking forward now.
Well, and on that topic, I said to you on Tuesday that, you know, maybe you know, we haven't had much of a chance to let you handicap anything. Did you look at something for the weekend?
I looked at the Saturday, a couple of the Saturday features going around at Gulfstream. They have the Royal Delta, of course, named after that Super Filly. It's Grade 3 race going to mile 16th, and it's quite an evenly matched batch. Nice fillies looking to get the Grade 3 number. I circled in on a few of them. Arnold Delacour's Aries 2, I kind of like that, going after her fourth win in a row. She's 3-1, and that's a fair price. It might even drift up with some of these other ones. And then there's a horse on the Safi Joseph's other horse, Queen Nakia, is almost $1.5 million. She's won 9 out of 31 races. She's been there and there close with some of these races, some of the stakes. She was third in this race last year at 8-1. She's 15-1 in the program. So, you know what? I kind of liked her a little bit at a price. So, that's the Gulfstream race. The Aqueduct race, the Maddie Day for the 3-year-old Philly State Bred is going a mile. Boy, it looks like the John Kimmel Show in there. John's been, he's got two of them. Of course, Secret Love, who won last time, going 3/4. This one's at a mile. I like his other one a little bit, Frost Me, coming out of 2-hole, coming off a nice win. Got them, I think, the leading rider there. And Ray Handel's horse, the 6-horse, Irish Constitution, coming off of a little bit of a break at Belmont, a state bred race, got beat a neck there going 7-8. So I like those two, Frost 3 and Irish Constitution. And then at Santa Anita, the old Buena Vista, another evenly matched race. Now, this category, you've heard me for years, this is, if they win one of these, you toss them because they're not going to win another one. I mean, probably with 2 years with not the single one horse winning two of the filly and mare races. And Johnny Wong came along with Keeper of the Stars last year. And now Mucho Unusual has won two in a row, winning the Frankel and the Megahertz. And she's going to be tough to beat in here, let's face it. But we're looking for a little bit of a price going to Vegas. The Richard Baltus Barn, who is super tough in turf stakes out in California. Red Lark, I know both of these horses dropping back in distance to the mile. I think you're going to get a decent price on Red Lark. She's a grade one winner a few races back. And then a horse at a little bit of a price from up north, Manny Padilla's horse, Sloan Garden. It's a Golden Gate type horse. The numbers fit down here. And so it's a wide open match. So some good races there. You know, I looked at the Saudi race, and, you know, I felt bad that I'm not really that interested in it, but I don't think a whole lot of people are. I'm going to box 4 horses, though. I'm going to box the Japanese horse, Chew a Wizard, John Gosden's horse, Global Giant, and then the 2 speedballs from here, Charlatan and Nick's Go, and take a shot if I end up in it. But that's who I came up with for that. And, hey. It's fun to do a little handicapping at home and play in some of the Derby Wars contests just to keep it a little fresh. But it's all good, and really looking forward to get back into action here. It's in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Hammer, I appreciate it, and I'm glad you. I brought up that the Badia Invader at Santa Anita. I like that. You took a little bit of a liking to Sloan Garden. I thought she was a fit in there at a price. You know, Badia's a guy that wins, and you know he's kind of a meat and potatoes operation, but he's pretty sharp.
Yeah, did you notice the ownership on that horse?
Actually, let me look back. I looked at it earlier. It's Ron Charles.
Ron Charles and Seth Gordon from Florida. Yeah, they've been kind of partners on horses for years. And he's run with Manny for a long time, and mostly up in Northern California since he's come back. So, and you're right, Manny's always won races. So that's why I think he could be competitive in there.
Excellent. Well, and he's the right price. Well, Hammer, stay warm and take up cross country skiing maybe this weekend to stay busy.
Yeah, well, I know I can ski down the hill where I'm staying. That's why I had to hitch a ride this morning. So we should be ice-free in the next day or two, so I will be happy for that. I got to thank Terry here. I'm right here in the Horseman's Bookkeeper's office because, you know, I'm in a different location every week here. So I'm trying to find where the phones work, but this is a good spot. So thank you, Terry, and next time we talk, the roads will be clear and the sun will be shining.
Perfect. Perfect. Rick Hammerly, everybody. And Oaklawn will come roaring back next week as the snow and ice fades away. We'll stay here to the top of the hour. Got about 20 minutes before Nick Tamaro joins us. And standing by is James Scully. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Not at all. James, a couple of quick thoughts before we dive into the Laurel action, the six stake sequence. Your Kentucky Derby report came out either Tuesday or Wednesday, and some thoughts about how that Risen Star shapes up coming out.
Yeah, you know, the big story on the takeaway with Mandaloon and the Risen Star with the addition of Blinkers. I mean, if you look at the quotes afterwards from Brett Cox, you know, he talked about how much more focused he was in the paddock post-parade and in the race itself. And even Florent Giroux was even more, a complimentary. He just said that they always knew that the horse needed Blinkers, but he was winning without them. But he said, like, in the comp, he didn't feel like he was giving him his best in the stretch that day. They had Blinkers, and he took a step forward. Now, I will say that experience running third and having a hard race, you know, throughout that LeComp, you know, where he was basically dueling with Midnight Bourbon or behind Midnight Bourbon with Proxy, that experience obviously probably benefited him as well. But it was a really encouraging performance. He got a triple-digit Brisnet speed rating for us. His speed ratings have increased in all four starts. Got a lot going for him. You know, he's from a real stamina-infused female family, buy into Mischief, and just a real, like, you know, another thing that the connections keep talking about is how he's just built for a distance. You can see he's a real big, athletic, well-built colt. And the other point I made in my Derby report about him was that, you know, this Blinkers, he's not the first horse this year. Obviously, risk-taking, added Blinkers two starts back. He's won two in a row by open lengths at a mile and an eighth, including the Withers. And that with Mandaloon, it made me remember a little bit back in 2003 when Empire Maker made his season debut. He was just a maiden winner. He ran in the Sham at Santa Anita. He was odds on in that race, and he ran second. And Frankel came back, he equipped him with Blinkers in the Florida Derby, and he won by 9 lengths. And afterwards, those Blinkers were such a big story, and an Empire Maker taking a step forward. They're part of the story with Mandaloon. And the thing with both horses is they're owned by Judmont Farms. And, you know, a lot of people talk about how the Kentucky Derby is, you know, can have like a sentimental story regarding the winning connections. You know, we saw it with Orb, with the Phipps and Janney and Shug McGahee and lots of other examples. And, you know, with Prince Khalid Bin Abdullah passing away in January, I think a lot of people would love to see Judmont and such industry titans get their first Judmont Farms, get their first Kentucky Derby winner with Mandaloon. And, you know, so there's a little bit of a tie-in there that I talked about in my Derby report this week, Steve.
Excellent. Let's no real, you know, Derby conversation. Although Ed brought up on Wednesday, it reminded everybody, and we'll remind everybody again. I'm sure there'll be a series of missives from Twin Spires and from Ed and everybody about the Hyacinth on Sunday, because those of you that are playing in the leaderboard contest, it is a scoring race, so don't forget that you got to get something in on the Hyacinth. And I didn't poke around overnight looking for for PPs and things from, you know, for that field, but I'm sure I'm sure you've got access to those.
Yes. I have not actually looked at that race yet, but I'm pretty sure we got them up there for the Hyacinth in Japan. I'd have to double check on that. But Kelly Riley is covering the European and Japan road to the Kentucky Derby. I know she's got a little going to have a preview story out there. She'll be writing the recap on Sunday. So, you know, if you get a chance, check out her. She'll be covering both the build up to the race and the recap afterwards. Still waiting for a horse to come through that Japanese series. You know, Lonnie was the last Japanese, but he qualified in the UAE Derby. So it'll be interesting to see if they can finally get a qualifier to the Derby through that points series, Steve.
Well, and when the next Japanese horse comes, whether it's that avenue or any other, nothing lights up Darren Rogers' emails like the presence of a Japanese horse in the Derby or the Breeders' Cup when it runs at Churchill. Darren will get literally a 50% boost in media requests when that rolls around. It's pretty funny. They're just so crazy for it. It's amazing. I'm just looking here at Briss and to see if that is up for Sunday yet. And I do not see a Tokyo listing yet. So we'll keep an eye out.
If I see anything for it,
yeah.
I'll send you a link or something.
Super.
I'll send you some on Twitter or text it or something. The other race, the big race on Saturday, I'm sure you've talked about it this week, is that Saudi Cup.
No, I haven't. You can handicap it. I won't have anything to say whatsoever.
Okay. I understand. Well, you know, obviously it's a big matchup between Charlatan and Nick's Go. I did think Charlatan drawing outside was an advantage for him. You know, he's going to be my top pick in there. But if you're looking to play some exotics in there, and this is a horse, you know, I got a little bit of a tip off of from Kelly. One horse to consider underneath if you're wagering on the Saudi Cup is that Chua Wizard. Last year the Japanese had a couple horses in there, Gold Dream and Chris O'Barrell, and they didn't run any good. But this Chua Wizard is really coming off a good win in this Group 1 Champions Cup in early December. Might not be good enough to win, but he's going to he's like 15-1 on the morning line. He's a long shot to consider for any kind of vertical exotics, and I'm going with Charlatan to win it, Steve.
Yeah, be aware for those of you that are going to play. Be aware that it's a barrier draw, so the way horses are listed is not necessarily the way they're their post position versus their saddle cloth. So for instance, that Chua Wizard is the four, but leaves from the rail, etc. Charlatan's the three, Nick's Go is the eight, but Nick's Go is inside of Charlatan. So most people that play international have gotten the hang of the barrier draw confusion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Basically, I've taken a look at Laurel. I took a look at it last Saturday. They canceled. They're supposed to return racing today. Checked earlier. They're still on for today. And it's supposed to be thawing out already there in Laurel, Maryland. I think they could still have, perhaps some early morning precipitation. But it's supposed to be thawing out later this evening and sunny all day tomorrow. So this is really their biggest day of the winter. They have six stakes scheduled tomorrow, including a pair of grade three sprint events, the Barbara Fritchie and the General George. A lot of good horses in the past have run in those races. And the stakes action gets underway with race number three. It's a three-year-old race, the Miracle Wood, a one-turn mile. You know, I look in here at this race, Steve, and Chad Brown has a horse in here, a last out maiden winner in number seven, Subsidized. And, he's just going to take some beating, I think. I think he's eligible to run back. I think he's going to get a good trip. If the track is wet, as I expect it to be, I think he's going to bred to relish it. The other horse in there that you have to respect is this Kenny Had a Notion. I really thought that his win last time in that spectacular bid stakes He only won by a neck over a rival in here, May the Horse Be With You, who comes back. But I really liked – I thought he looked like, you know, he really had the upper hand in deep stretch that day. Looks like a horse that's moving forward for Dale Capuano. Dale Capuano has a couple contenders on the card on Saturday. And those are your major players in there. I took a little bit of a look at Tim's Mandate at a price. Because there's some space entered in this Miracle Wood, but I think an in the money finish might be more realistic. But this colt does have some upside. Originally has some upside. He's only raced three times.
It's Damon Dillodovico and a strong mandate out of a congrats mare on the rail, going to save all the ground, and then Toledo probably, you know, tries to kick outside. That King Cheek at 8-1, Jamie Ness cross entered to run in New York as well as a New York bred, and so we'll see, you know, what he does. But that it looks like a modest type, but I don't know, that wet track performance at Parks going 7/8. Not so bad, and seems to fit on number power. And, you know, you mentioned May the Horse Be With You, Brittany Russell for Michael Dubb and Mike Caruso. This is a Bulls Bay gelding that has actually not done too much wrong. Five exacta performances in six starts. It's a nice way to start the stakes sequence, and then gives way to the John B. Campbell. We had a lot of fun talking about the history of the Campbell yesterday with Tony and then with Steve Askin. This has got a lot of familiar players in it, and it includes a horse like Bankett, who drew outside, and you got good old Forewarned. How old is he now? He's six for Your Eyes St. Louis. Rodney Jenkins, whose name came up with Woodbury Payne the other day. Rodney's got Cordmaker in here, now a six-year-old gelding, the Curlin. Nice group for the Campbell.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, with Bankett, I mean, that last performance, that last win at Aqueduct in mid-December was just, I mean, it was really an improvement upon his recent races. He had only won one of his previous 19 starts, really sort of took a step forward, it seemed like, for Steve Asmussen that day. But he is still a little bit tough to trust. Just worried about him, perhaps, you know, not running back to that race because he's been inconsistent throughout his career. I thought that the alternative I was really interested in was number six, Dixie Draw. Now, he's a former claimer for Capuano, a five-year-old gelding, Dixie Draw is. But he did win 4 of 8 starts last year. He brought him back in January. He ran second in the flop at Laurel. And I just really liked that win last time, Steve. I thought he offered a real strong move, going into the far turn to seize control of that race. And then once he got to the top of the stretch, he, you know, had another gear and drew off. And, you know, he's always run well on wet tracks, so I don't think the footing will be any problem. He just looks like a horse that's entering on the upswing, number six, Dixie Draw.
Nice. There's also Dale Bennett's horse that just noticing, too. Off the claim and then into the Jennings and ran very well in the Jennings. The Jumpstart gelding, Galerio, 6-1 with the X-Man. And he's got speed and it seems kind of versatile.
And he definitely has the figures as well. His figures have really gotten strong in the last couple of races, Galerio.
The Nellie Morse is the fillies and mares version of the Campbell, and this group, the group of 10 in here, and again, a number of familiar names and hard hitters, including a horse like Lucky Stride coming off the wayward last win. 10 Strike has got Lucky Move, who we've seen at a high level over the last couple of years, now age 7. She's never run at Laurel, actually, which is somewhat surprising. Wicked Awesome for our friend Ferris Allen, and Al Gold's got Daphne Moon coming down from Belmont. Landing Zone, Claudio Gonzalez as well, a Morning Line 4-year-old filly coming out of the Alaire DuPont back on Boxing Day. Makes her first start of the year, the 4-year-old.
Yeah, a very competitive race. You know, Lucky Stride is going to be the favorite in here for Trombetta. And definitely, you know, you have to respect that last race at Tampa. Probably didn't beat much there. But, you know, she got a race over the track in late November in that 38 Go-Go, ran second to Eris 2, who's coming back in the Royal Delta, that won the 38 Go-Go and the Allaire DuPont back-to-back. And looks like she's got a nice, could be a really nice this year in 2021, Eris 2. So Lucky Strahd, and you know, and she's going to win in a second and two starts on off track. But she is a late runner in here. Going to have to, you know, it's going to be going to, you know, must avoid leaving herself too much to do, I thought. I thought number one, Landing Zone, you know, had some appeal for Claudio Gonzalez. I really thought that, you know, it was no disgrace, you know, losing to Aries 2 last time in that Allaire DuPont. You know, she stretched back out the two turns there, got a little bit of a class check in that race after, you know, she won four races in a row last fall, really wasn't beating the toughest company, but she stepped up and has two stakes efforts under her belt, a third and then a fourth in that DuPont. She's eligible to keep moving forward at age four, and was one because she has good tactical speed. Like I said, I don't know if there's a lot of pace in this race. And I thought Landing Zone is a filly I'm going to include on any multi-race ticket, Steve.
It's very good. And, you know, I just want to mention a friend Doug on Twitter, Doug Durso, I thought you, maybe I didn't hear you clearly about Laurel, but they're canceled today.
Oh, are they? Oh, I'm sorry. I did not know they were canceled. Today.
I thought you were referring actually to the cancellation, but I guess I didn't. And Doug, yeah. As I said that to Doug, and he said that maybe he misheard you, but no, Laurel's canceled today, and
all right,
they'll get the track hopefully in good shape. We ended up, you know, we ended up getting a little bit more snow than we expected too. And Tina is outside actually clearing, which we greatly appreciate. But of course she was able yesterday, James. You know, for those that say you're making her clear the driveway, she got the baby out of the king cake again yesterday, and for the second year in a row. I have not yet had the thrill of finding the baby in the king cake. And I want to thank Ben Bacek for sending us another cake this year. This one from Nona Rendazzo, which is, you know, one of the premier king cake manufacturers. So
is she stocking the babies on the shelf that she put this year next to last
I've kept
year?
The baby. If it was up to her, she would throw the baby away. But I kept the baby on the shelf, and this baby, this was a big baby. the baby in this Randazzo cake, it was a kind of a hefty baby. She's two for two on king cake babies.
Yeah, I miss the king cake. You know, I've Kelly is from New Orleans, and she has her sister ships her a king cake every year for and she typically brings it in the office and we all get a piece. And I didn't get down to New Orleans last year, so I'm missing being down there. And but, you know, it wouldn't have been much going on if you were down there anyway. So hopefully next year I can get back down for the racing and see the city.
Absolutely. All right. Let's press forward on this Laurel sequence. Scully with us. We're going to have Nick Tamaro after a break, top of the hour.
All right. Yeah. The race number six is the Wild Country. It's a 7-furlong race for 3-year-old fillies. You know, the favorite in here is Street Loot. She's a Maryland-bred street magician filly for John Robb. She has won four in a row, a Maryland-bred filly. She's won her last two over open company. Definitely going to be forward from the start with Xavier Perez, the horse to beat in here. But I like Salt Plage a little bit. She's my top pick. I thought that her maiden win was solid, but I really thought she took a step forward last time in that race at Parks. You know, she's a quality road, should have no trouble handling a wet track with her pedigree there. And, you know, looks like a filly that could get a right good setup with a bunch of these fillies, like, having their sights set on the front end in this Wide Country Stakes. So I'm going with number two, Salt Plage, over the favorite in their Street Loot, Steve.
Well, Street Loot, the race that she ran in that extra heat, you know, she's got to negotiate an extra furlong, and she's been successful twice. You know, when she won the Juvenile Filly Championship at the beginning of December, and then came back and won the Gin Talking. So she's been tough, and she does not have to have the lead. This is a really good group of 3-year old fillies, and there's a lot that could go on in here. You're certainly right that, you know, there's too many horses that have some interest in the front end, you know, to think that anybody's just going to simply wire. But Hammy Smith's got that Bucky's Charm for Men's Grill. This is a Cantheros, and you know, certainly, you know, ran a nice race in the Anne Arundel, and she cuts back to 7/8, and that, you know, that can be potent. Fergal Lynch aboard, and certainly I got to bring up Five Hellions and Lacey Gaudette, Team Gaudette, with Fraudulent Charge. And our friend, you know, the Five Hellions has got a big opportunity for a double in here, because they've got Fraudulent Charge in the 3-year-old race, and then Don't Let Sweet Fool Ya comes back next in the Fritchie at 7/2. So
and even good. Little Huntress, you want to mention Little Huntress in there
on the
as
outside.
Well.
That
Frosted Filly, they paid $100,000 for. Brittany Russell trains her. Broke her maiden last time by 14 lengths, and she was 1-5 in that race. So looks like she, you know, could have a nice future, Steve.
Well, and she really, you know, the one thing, you know, she kind of made a quantum leap forward in that second start, which isn't that unusual. But, you know, it's going to have to probably take one more step ahead in this spot. A very good addition of the Wide Country, which brings us to the double, the start of the late pick three. There's actually a solid enough maiden special that ends the card. So, unfortunately, there's not a sequence, a portion of the sequence here that is all stakes. I mean, internally there are a couple of, you know, the pick threes, but there's no all stake pick four or all stake pick five. But the Barbara Fritchie and the grade three brings together some, again, a lot of mid-Atlantic heavy heads, including Hello Beautiful, who's going to be 8-5 to start things. I just mentioned Don't Let Sweet Fool You. Nothing Wrong With Sharp Star for Barry Schwartz and Horacio De Paz down inside. Some nice fillies and mares lining up in here.
You know, I do think Hello Beautiful is going to be extremely tough to beat in there. I mean, I really liked her. You know, I really like how she has finished last year with those back-to-back wins, and then came back last time in that What a Summer. And, you know, I mean, yeah, her lead decreased in the stretch, but, I mean, she really just had that race in hand, I thought. And that was on and she's won both her races on good track, I mean, on wet track. So, I mean, it's going to be awfully tough. I thought, though, that Needs Supervision really, I thought, took a step forward last time. You know, she came back from a layoff last fall in November and ran third and fifth in stake races and really didn't make much of an impact. But I thought her last race was an improvement. I've always sort of liked this Painter mare a little bit for Jeremiah O'Dwyer. So I don't know if she's good enough to win, but she was a price horse that I'm looking at that was a little interesting to me in this spot in the Barbara Fritchie, Steve.
Nice. Turn our attention to the eighth, the boys' race, the General George. And after some confusion about his name, we know for that it's going forward as the General George. And again, you got you know, veterans in here. How about Lackey, an old favorite? Lebda shows up in here as a 4-year-old. Good old funny guy.
Hard-hit New York bred.
Yeah.
And Share the Ride is, you know, coming, you know, he was favored last out in the Toboggan at Aqueduct. So, yeah, good mix of horses in here. I didn't think there was a lot of speed in here, Steve. And I'm giving number three Lebda a shot in here. I thought that his effort last time in the Fire Plug was really solid. He showed good speed that day. Got huge E1 and E2 pace ratings for us. A career high speed rating. It was on a good track as well. And I just thought that was a a real encouraging effort, and I just expect him to be inside speed with Alex Cintron. I hope he breaks running. Give him a chance to lead wire to wire in here. You know, but I definitely do respect Funny God and Share the Rod, and if I'm looking to spread in this race and multi-race tickets, you know, it's hard to throw those horses out.
Well, I just added up. I mean, there's almost $4 million in earnings represented in this group, and pretty impressive, 10 horses. And I got to tell you, as an eight-year-old with Damon Dillodovico, and over the years, I don't know how many times Damon's been on to talk about him. What a nice career, 10 wins, 7 seconds. A win in here for Lackey would be really put the spurs to his attempt to become a millionaire. He's made $715,000, and you know, another $150,000 in here would really kind of put him in range. And he's not lost much. I mean, you know, he's not running, you know, the high 100 plus buyers that he used to, but he's still capable of mid to, you know, high 90s, and hard not to root for Lackey in here with Hector Caramanos.
And perhaps the move back to 7 furlongs will benefit him. He's been running in all these 6 furlong stakes where perhaps that extra furlong, you know, because he's going to be looking to stalk and pounce, you know, turn it for home. Lackey will be. So even in that last race, he concludes the pick 5. I like the one horse. So he's 9-5, but imagine Hong Kong. I went and looked at that race that he ran last time, that Gary Capuano imagining gelding. That's a pretty interesting little race. I mean, most of the horses in there are going to take money. You got American Pharoah, first-time starter in there. So, imagine Hong Kong's my pick in the last two, Steve.
Well, and the problem with this, of course, is you've got, 1, 2, 3, 4 first-timers, and you got the 3 that have run, and 2 of them coming out of those waiver maiden races beginning end of last year, the beginning of last year, including this Imagine Hong Kong. I didn't do any pedigree work on this race. I was focused on the stakes. So a nice slate of stakes, though, to basically have, I think, the majority of the country's attention when it comes to tomorrow. And the first stake runs at 1:32.
Last second Friday play.
There we go.
Longest shot on the board in race 6 at Santa Anita, number 6, Mongolian Sunrise. She catches a really bad field. She broke her maiden last February over a bad field by 8¾ lengths. I think her last efforts has sharpened her speed. I like Mongolian Sunrise. Flavin Pratt doesn't have a mount in that race either, so I don't have to worry about him. But 6 in the 6th race at Santa Anita, Steve.
6th in the 6th at SA late this afternoon, early evening for the LSFP, the James Scully Last Second Friday Push. James, good luck this weekend. We got a big prep weekend next week, so we'll look forward to talking then.
Sounds good, Steve. Thanks.
James _ Scully 111 on your Twitter. Let's take a break, last of the morning, and we'll come back with Nick Tamaro. We'll get firsthand how things have somewhat improved in and around Houston. Water still a problem, but since you heard from Nick last, he was displaced and had to take wife and baby and find someplace safe and warm, and we'll catch up with Nick next. At the Races Weekend Preview, brought to you by Twin Spires. And speaking of which, as we go out, let me slip in. I didn't expand on them with James, but in addition, of course, to Sunday's leaderboard contest that we brought up with Ed, there is what I referenced with Fonner Park, a couple of promotions. Each weekend at Fonner, from now till mid-March, a $500 dead heat jackpot. It's kind of fun. And if no dead heat occurs, they'll carry the amount over to get it paid out. And so it could keep building. Otherwise, you know, if there is one, And I'm, it doesn't say, does it say about if it's a win? Does it have to be? Yeah, for the win, not a dead heat anywhere on the chart, but a dead heat for a win. So if anybody, this is kind of kooky. If there's a dead heat for the win, all players who had at least $5 to win on one of the horses split the $500 jackpot. Just obviously, if you're going to play Fawner, just opt in. You know, you got to opt in on these contests. So this is kind of fun. dead heat jackpot. So and if there isn't a dead heat this weekend, it then next week the pot will be $1,000. And it'll keep incrementally growing by $500. Pretty cool little idea. Who came up with this? Dead heat jackpot at Fawner. So check out all the offers at Twin Spires. Back after this, Nick Tamara.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
A great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports.